And good afternoon, good evening, good morning, where you happen to be listening to us today. It's the Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, our ninth episode, and hopefully this week we're going to do a special for you, get two installments of us, and hopefully you'll be able to listen to that, and we're more than pleased to give it to you. I'm John Morgo, along with
Daniel Bolton. And Leon Brown.
All right, we're going to jump right into things. Again, there's a lot going on here in the world of sports, and especially we're kind of in a transitionary period. Baseball World Series is going on, and not only that, we're halfway home in the college football season, and guess what? College basketball is starting up. NBA has already started. NHL started as well, and of course, well, the NFL, can't forget them. They're going strong, and we're going to talk a lot about it, but right now we're going to go back to college football, and we're going to have our good friend Ben Moore from 247sports.com. He's joining us now to talk a little Georgia State, both football and basketball. Ben, how are you?
Hey, great, John. Thanks for having me, man. Happy Sunday to you, sir.
Oh, happy Sunday to you, too. Well, let's talk a little bit about the Panthers. They are 1-2 in the Sun Belt play. And, you know, Ben, it just seems like that these guys just don't seem to get up for the ESPN broadcast. They were on last night, or two nights ago, at Arkansas State, and the Red Wolves had a great first half. Panthers came on a little bit in the second, and they're now 1-2 in the Sun Belt. What about this team have you noticed?
Yeah, the biggest thing that's plagued really the program since they jumped FBS in 2013, you know, just turning the ball over at critical junctures. You know, part of that was, for the fumble. So just has been an issue all season long, key moments. It really started against Kennesaw State. You know, had an opportunity down the goal line on the first offensive drive of the season, go down there and really want to punch that in, kind of put the stamp on the on there, and basically fumbled it away. And it's been an issue all season long with a lot of the youth on this roster, and we can certainly talk about that at length. I know I've covered it on our site and other podcasts that we have done and other radio interviews. The Panthers are basically one of the youngest teams in the FBS ranks. They've played already 13 true freshmen, and 17 freshmen were on the two deep, whether they be redshirt freshmen or true freshmen, on Thursday night. When you have that amount of youth, I call it an EKG, you're going to have, you know, pops of really good, like we saw earlier in the season with Seth Page, with an explosive run here or there, but you're also going to have the Seth Page, hey, he gets hit by guys that are a little bit heavier than what he got hit when he was in the high school ranks, just a short, you know, 6, 8, 10 months ago, and he can put the ball on the carpet. Coach Elliott has certainly been frustrated by that, but not dismayed, and certainly thinks there's a lot of football left to be played and a lot of opportunities for wins starting this upcoming Saturday with homecoming in Coastal Carolina.
And exactly, you're talking about the youth, and the Panthers are especially young in the secondaries. I think they're starting mostly freshmen as their cornerbacks and safeties.
Yeah, both cornerbacks are freshmen. Jalen Jones is a redshirt freshman kid from Georgia. Quay White is the other cornerback who is a true freshman out of the state of South Carolina. Both players are very talented. I know in the 24/7 composite, we had Quay White as a three-star prospect. He was a kid, actually, that had late rush of interest on signing day from Clemson and South Carolina. Both were vying for his attention. Both had, had given him a preferred walk-on spot, and his parents were just basically waiting on saying, hey, look, you know, we'll gladly stay in state, but we're not doing it as a walk-on and where we have to pay for school. We wanted a scholarship, and neither pulled the trigger. He ended up sticking with his commitment to Georgia State and coming on. And he's showed moments. He's had an interception against NC State in the late in that ball game there and played well. But as I mentioned a little bit earlier, I mean, he's a freshman. So you're going to have up and down moments. And as the legendary coach Al McGuire said, the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores.
Exactly. And looking at the schedule for Georgia State, the last couple of ball games, got home games now with Coastal and Texas State. And of course, that matchup looming with Georgia Southern. How does that schedule, do you think, kind of plays itself out for them?
It's really difficult, certainly, and you just kind of hit it, and Appalachian State squeezed in between there as well, and we've seen what Appalachian State has done so far this year, taking Penn State to overtime, haven't lost a game since. They and Georgia Southern play this weekend down in Statesboro on Thursday night, and probably one of the best matchups in the conference all season long. So playing both of those teams is going to be very difficult. I think, you know, Saturday will tell us a lot. Coastal Carolina is still making their transition to the FBS ranks. They haven't really gotten their sea legs as of yet, but you know, did pick up a win yesterday against UMass. And so they'll be coming in with a little bit of momentum. I'm very interested to see if the Panthers can utilize that momentum, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, against Arkansas State. They were down 34-7 at halftime, came back to score 28 second-half points. Can you have ride that offensive momentum? The toughest part about this, and as a guy who grew up a Falcons fan, it's very, very eerily similar between the college team and the pro team that I happen to root for. The offense has to be electric and has to score a lot of points because the defense is awful. And for very similar reasons, you're playing a lot of young players. You also have a lot of injuries that have taken their toll. And we'll see also, speaking of injuries, how Dan Ellington comes out. He left the ball game against Arkansas State. From what we are hearing early in the week, certainly we don't hit the practice field until tomorrow, but he's going to try to test out. He had a leg injury, so we'll see how he fares there and see if he's able to go. If not, it'll be redshirt junior Aaron Winchester at the helm, and he's fortunately for the Panthers has started some games for Georgia State, so he's not completely inexperienced.
Yeah, those extra 2 days from that Thursday night game, that certainly will help the Panthers get healthy.
Yeah, Ben, this is Daniel. You mentioned the defense earlier, and of course they're giving up 36.5 points a game this season through the first 7 games of the year. What is it with the naked eye that you see is the problem with them defensively?
I think it's just that this team has not been able to replace a ton of senior players last year. And some of the some of those injuries, as I mentioned, Cedric Stone was out for the season. He was a guy who was a nickel corner for the first two parts of his career coming into his junior year. He had an opportunity to take over the cornerback spot opposite Jerome Smith. Jerome Smith got injured early in the season, hurt his shoulder against NC State. He left the program shortly after that game as well. So you're down two of your more experienced cornerbacks. And as we know in college football now, when you start going third, fourth, fifth cornerbacks and getting down the list, it's difficult to perform against the passing game. So you really have to stop the running game as well, and that just hasn't happened this season. I think the Panthers are very undersized and inexperienced up the middle, playing a ton of freshmen at linebacker, playing a ton of freshmen along the defensive line, and it's been tough to watch, quite honestly, as this is one of the worst defenses in FBS. And I honestly, as I told some folks after the game on Thursday, I'm not sure that it can be fixed this season. So, whether it's a schematic adjustment, whether the defense right now is very, very vanilla. Part of that, I think, is the youth and the experience. They just don't want to put the young players out in a bad spot. But part of it is just, continuing to have some of these younger players grow up.
I'm kind of hoping for something too, Ben. You see, Appalachian State is ranked in the top 25. So that's the crazy thing about that one. I'm kind of hoping that they stay ranked until they get to Atlanta and play us, because what we've seen this year is we've seen like a constant where ranked teams have been defeated by unranked teams. So we've seen a lot of that this year. I'm kind of hoping to see that this year with App State. Georgia State is coming out playing their best game. What do you think about that?
Yeah, they're a tough matchup, and unfortunately, throughout the history, certainly the Sun Belt, App State has owned Georgia State, has really, really dominated them on both sides of the football. And something, truthfully, that comes up a lot, they're beating Georgia State with Atlanta kids. And I know that has bothered some of the fan base and some of the supporters as well. Just for example, last Thursday night, the running back for Arkansas State from Hiram, he held an offer from Georgia State. He chose to go to Arkansas State. They have several players on both offensive side and defensive side of the ball from Metro Atlanta. So it's very difficult to kind of digest that. But you would certainly hope from an offensive side of things, and when I kind of say we especially in the game of football, if you have a potent offense, it gives you a puncher's chance. It gives you a chance to basically put up some points, hope for some turnovers, and get an opportunity to stay in the game. And I think that's the critical part about it. Can you turn Appalachian State over and really win that turnover margin? When the Panthers have won games this year against Louisiana Monroe and Kennesaw State, they have won the turnover margin. The games that they have lost are really been blown out in. The turnover margin has swung far the other way. So I think that's a key stat to watch and see. You'll see what they can do moving forward.
Hey, Ben, this is Leon. Glad to hear from you again, bro. Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. So, being that our defense, or GSU's defense, is somewhat leaking, does that kind of put pressure on those who are in charge of recruiting? Like, you know, like where will our focus on recruiting be for next year? Will we continue to try to recruit on defense, or will we hope that these young men become sophomores and their play will mature as well? But, you know, where are we at with that at this juncture?
Yeah, I think the biggest part is recruiting. You know, that's the lifeblood of every program. Truthfully, the program has, you know, has really come a long way, you know, trying to recruit and find the right mix. What's interesting is the program opened up fall practice with 76 scholarship players. So it wasn't at the full, you know, you're allowed to have 85 at the FBS level. It kind of breaks down to that. What has been interesting over the last couple weeks has seen some junior college offers come out. That tells me a lot. Not only that, what the staff's focus is they want to look, especially along the lines, offensive line and defensive line, to go and try to find some junior college help, or needed help. Because really, as I say, a lot of times, both in basketball and football, you don't go to the junior college ranks to have these folks sit on your bench. They typically only have 2 years left to play, and you want to shove them right in there and get them to play. So if you can find a junior college defensive lineman like Georgia State had last year in Julian Laurent, you know, who is now playing in Canada in the CFL. You know, he was a former weightlifting champion at the nose guard. I certainly would love to go try to find another nose guard and somebody who's that kind of size you can plug right there in the middle. It would be helpful, help the linebackers and free them up and get them an opportunity just to slow the run down. So I think that's a focus, and it just comes down to recruiting. You know, there is unfortunately no free agency period in college football. You got to go out and sign 25 guys every single season and go out there and try to find the best fit. And Georgia State will have plenty of scholarships available with only 12 scholarship seniors graduating. So they can really be picky and choosy and figure out what they want in both the December and the February signing period.
Well, I heard a key word that you said right there is junior college. That sounds like a primary solution to that, because like you were saying, like the best thing about freshmen is that they become sophomores. But in a situation where you're trying to win now, hey, there's always that junior college option, and you get these men who they're coming in brand new, but they're coming in with junior level experience.
So. Yeah, and it's different. You know, that the junior college, you know, ranks, and it is different. It is a different level of football. Certainly, there are strong junior colleges all across the country. I've seen the pockets down in the Mississippi area that you know, certainly have seen on, you know, Netflix specials like Last Chance U. I know, talking to Nick Arbuckle, you know, who came from the California junior colleges, how strong that is as well, the Midwest junior college as well, that is currently being on that show on Last Chance U, for example. But there's great pockets everywhere. The biggest thing you have to look at from a junior college ranks is just the level of competition. You know, Georgia Military College in the past has been a solid program for Georgia State to recruit to, you know, they sometimes play Navy prep schools or, you know, what would be kind of a glorified high school. So you kind of have to gauge those level of competitions and, hey, somebody that may be attractive and look amazing and get to prep school, well, that's not necessarily a college. That's not going to, you know, necessarily translate. So you do have to do your level of evaluation. And Sean Elliott and his staff have done a great job, too, inviting junior college prospects to camps, including high school prospects, and see how they match up and see how far they are ahead, or if the high school guys that are ahead of them, even like you said, with a couple of years experience. So the staff is certainly doing their evaluations, and it will be very interesting to see who they target and who they bring in for official visits once December rolls around.
Exactly, Ben. But let's switch gears. Let's talk a little hoops. Georgia State's they're in the middle of practice, and their first look at the public's first look at them will be in their exhibition game in about a week and a half from right now. A lot of excitement around this program. Devin Mitchell, DeMarcus Simons, probably one of the best combination in the league. What are you hearing about the expectations going into this program heading into the new season?
Yeah, they're through the roof, no question. And on top of that, probably one of the most impressive non-conference schedules in the Ron Hunter tenure here at Georgia State. It's really, really been impressive to see what he's been able to do. Coach Hunter has talked about how difficult it is to get folks to come to the sports arena here in Atlanta. So, you know, he could go out and quickly and easily, you know, schedule 6 or 7 pay games. He has not done that. But he still found a strong field and opens the season up, the regular season at least, with Mercer, which I thought was certainly great and a nod to our former conference mates there in the Atlantic Sun and TAC days. Coach Hunter is giddy with DeMarcus Simons back and really motivated. This is his, you know, kind of show up and show out year for the NBA. There's many people prognosticators who believe he's one of the top 100 players in the country. So depending on how he does this season, he can certainly work his way into the first round of the NBA draft. You mentioned Devin Mitchell, one of the top three-point shooters in the country last year statistically, just missed the 100 three-pointer mark last season. And just kind of give you some context, that's averaging about 3 three-pointers made a game. So he went crazy and had some opportunities where he hit 6, 7, 8 threes in a game. He has that capability. The guy that I like a ton on this roster is Damon Wilson, transferred in from University of Pittsburgh, an Atlanta kid. Went to prep school basically for his senior year up north. He's back, and he, you know, is on that level, as Coach Hunter has continued to say. He could be an RJ Hunter, a Ryan Harrow-type impact player. And he's 6'5", 200 pounds, and can handle the basketball. Will probably play point guard alongside DeMarcus Simon. So just from a size point of view alone, the guards on this team is just an overwhelming ability and talent level. So the excitement level should be high. Expectations should be very high coming off that first round loss to Cincinnati last year. We saw DeMarcus do. He scored 18 points to open the game up there in Nashville. So it's exciting. I can't believe college basketball is here, but it also signals that really true fall and almost winter are here as well.
Exactly. Now, one thing I've noticed about this Georgia State team, the last 2 years when they've gone to these prestigious classics, tournaments, they're in the mid-major division. But now here we are with the Cayman Islands Classic, and they're in the main draw. It's an 18 field. They have a chance to play Georgia in that third round. What would it mean for Georgia State to get on the court with Georgia and possibly beat the Bulldogs?
Oh, it's huge. I was on campus in 99, 2000, and then 2000, 2001, getting to see Georgia State beat Georgia in consecutive years. Once up there at Stegeman Coliseum, where Thomas Terrell, the great Thomas Terrell, went nuts and dropped 29 points on the Bulldogs up there. And then the following year in the kind of NCAA dry run game, Georgia State drilled Georgia again in the Georgia Dome. It was tremendous. And I remember that day, Jim Herrick, the University of Georgia head coach, basically saying, we will never play them again as long as I'm here. And even having the UGA radio analysts and people saying like that, they were recounting how many times that Georgia State had beaten Georgia in a calendar year. And it was twice for basketball, once in baseball, once in softball. And the commentators back then in 2001 said, well, thank God they don't have football. So it was certainly a great moment. Georgia State has won more games than any other Division I team in the state of Georgia the last 5 years, and continues to rock and roll with that. They are playing, and I'll let you guys know, just for your podcast here and folks that listen to your podcast, a little tip for you, kind of an off the record piece for you. Uh-oh. One of the NCAA sanctioned secret scrimmages, Georgia State will be playing Kennesaw State in something that no fans can attend.
Exactly.
So you won't hear about it. You won't know about the stats, but another in-state foe that Georgia State will face. And Ron Hunter has fared very, very well against in-state teams in his career at Georgia State as well. So it would be a huge feather in the cap, and certainly something that the program can get excited about. We saw last year Georgia State face Georgia Tech in the exhibition game there for hurricane relief. And there was a lot of people that came out of Tech with their eyes wide open about how badly Georgia Tech got beat by Georgia State. So it would be another certainly feather in the cap of Ron Hunter, and probably aid in the fact that we're probably not going to get a game with them anytime soon if we go up, if we beat them in the Cayman Islands.
Exactly. Another thing I want to ask you, what are you hearing about Nelson Phillips?
Yeah, it was an interesting deal because he didn't actually travel with the Panthers, didn't actually enroll until August. So it was a unique deal there. He did have some academic coursework that he had to finish up coming from the high school ranks. That doesn't always mean negative. He's a super talented athlete. Got a chance to see him live and in person a couple times with Warner Robins, the team that won the state championship there. He's an incredibly wiry, strong guard. And, Georgia State and Coach Hunter like those kind of players. He's a guy, I think, that will impact the game immediately from the defensive side of things. He was a guy who was a 24/7 composite four-star guard. So he was one of the top players in the state of Georgia in the 2018 class. Just really, really athletic guy that can get up and down the floor, press. That's something that I really want to see what Coach Hunter does this year, having the ability to press, having the ability to trap. with a guy like Nelson Phillips. And another freshman I like a ton is Cavonte Ivory. I'm a little bit partial. I went to high school in Henry County. This young man is from Stockbridge High School in Henry County, talking to some folks down there as well. He showed up at campus at 6'7", 230 pounds. He has the ability to shoot the three. He may, quite honestly, take some time away from Malik Benlevy, who is a senior, which wouldn't be a bad thing for Malik. Don't get mad, Malik. I love you. But it's one of those scenarios where he can allow him to be a little bit more fresh, not having to play Malik 37, 38 minutes a game, allowing to slide back and let Cavonte get in there. And really something I'm interested in, from the scrimmage even yesterday, Malik played some five yesterday in some sets. Having him with his length and having his opportunity to get on the field, or get on the score, have that opportunity to really press and run. And as we know, and John knows, he's seen it before, Malik can hit three at about six and a half, six seven. So to have a full lineup of all five guys being able to stretch the floor and hit the three, it's a problem, and there's not a lot of Sun Belt teams that can roll out the talent. But yeah, I'm very high on Nelson Phillips. I think his ceiling is tremendous. I think he's just kind of starting to scratch his offensive game, and he's a guy too that can come in. I think, you know, I'm not a huge comparison guy, quite honestly, because their games are very different. But yeah, if you look how DeMarcus Simons came into the program, he was not a strong three-point shooter. Nelson is a better three-point shooter than DeMarcus is. DeMarcus is probably more physically ready from a shooting guard point of view. But defensively, both of them are excellent. Both of them came in, and they can lock guys up defensively. And there's not many freshmen in college basketball who are prepared from a defensive side of things. But he has the defensive effort, and he's going to be one that's going to come off the bench and be in the rotation. It's just, you know, going to be interesting to see how quickly he moves himself up that rotation once the season starts.
Talking about that scrimmage, that was yesterday at the Georgia State Decatur campus, which used to be the arena for our Georgia Perimeter College Jaguars. And Daniel is actually wearing a Georgia Perimeter College Jaguar sweatshirt. So, like I said, that school is, the arena is still dressed in the purple and gold, and people were going in and kind of did a little bit of a double take anyway. So, yeah, I was there. I saw some of that. Saw Devin Mitchell looked really well. Saw DeMarcus Simons. Didn't see any rust. Before we let you go, Ben, I'm going to give you my five on the floor for that starter, for that starting game against ETSU, and you agree or disagree. Of course, we're going to have DeMarcus Simons, Devin Mitchell in the backcourt, Jordan Tyson, Jeff Thomas, the forwards, and Malik Benlevy as kind of like an off-guard forward type.
Yes, I would. The only question I would have, and this is going to be the interesting dynamic, because Jeff is a senior, and he has played kind of that third guard, that wing position, and he has the ability to shoot three. How quickly Damon Wilson is inserted into the starting lineup, because he is a much better ball handler than Jeff is. So if you want another ball handler and being able to move DeMarcus potentially to that off-guard position and let him show off kind of what he's worked on in the offseason, continuing to improve his jump shot and have Devin Mitchell potentially that third guard. But, no, I think that's going to be the lineup, and I think it's going to rotate. I think it's going to change from the matchup point of view, too. You know, if you really want to get in, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, I mean, Damon's a legit 6'5", 200. If you've got small-ish guards that they're going to be facing, you can put Damon on some of those guys, and he can really go to work on some of the some of the players there. And his 3-point shot is excellent as well. This may be the best 3-point shooting team that Ron Hunter has fielded here, and that includes the team with R.J. Hunter, right, who of course owns the records for 3-point shooting. There's just weapons all over the court, and I was looking at, I guess, the KenPom ratings came out yesterday. They project as of right now, and again, grain of salt, it's preseason, nothing has been played, no games have happened yet, but they project a potential winning number for win-loss for the Panthers at 25-4. So that would be insane. That would be certainly something that you see the Panthers ranked in February. I'm going to go a little bit under that if I had a guess. I like the starting lineup top to bottom, and I like Jeff's game, and he's continued to progress as he's been here. But he's going to have to fight for minutes, as I mentioned, Malik Benlevy and really everyone else except DeMarcus and Devin, to be honest.
Okay, well, we're trying to get Coach Hunter to come onto the podcast. Hopefully we can get him for next week. But Ben, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to join us, and we hope to hear from you sometime later on down the road, especially when we get into Sun Belt play.
Yeah, and keep on showing up.
Sounds good, John. You got it, guys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, no problem. All right, that was Ben Moore from 247sports.com talking to us here on The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, talking about the ceiling for the Georgia State Panthers men's basketball squad, and he mentioned that KenPom rankings, which came out yesterday. Interesting note, Georgia State's the highest-ranked team from Georgia in that ranking, 81, over Georgia, over Georgia Tech, and over all the other Division I schools in this Peach State.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all about that one, John, because I think for the last two or three seasons, they've probably been the best team in the state. I know Mercer was a few years back, but they started to get the ranks back. Ron Hunter is just doing a tremendous job on and off the court. Especially when we talk about off the court, we talk about recruiting as well. So, and he's got Mitchell and he's got Simons. He's probably got the best backcourt in the non-Power 5 conference, you know, in all of the non-Power conferences. So it's going to be an interesting year. I think it's going to be an exciting time for Georgia State University. Hopefully they can get back to the tournament. I think they'll win the Sun Belt. I think they'll win it outright. I think they'll win the tournament as well.
Yeah, their only possible roadblock on that is Louisiana Raging Cajuns. They're probably going to be the only one, and those are going to be two exciting games. They play them home and home this season, and then we're probably going to play them third time down at the conference tournament in New Orleans, Lakefront Coliseum, and actually starting not this season, but next year, they're moving over to the Smoothie King Arena in downtown New Orleans where the Pelican plays for that conference tournament. That's going to be very exciting. Can't wait to, hopefully I'm still around doing Georgia State women's basketball to get in there. And you're talking about the starting lineup. I'm looking over it right now. A lot of Georgia products. The only two people not from the state of Georgia, Thomas and Tyson, everybody else from this state. So like I said, you got to recruit from Georgia. And I know Ben was talking about football, and I'm just going to back up and go around for a little bit. Football's kind of the same way. I travel in the NAIA. I was in Kentucky, and I'm looking over the roster of University of the Cumberland's. Their main running back, Milton Shelton, he came from Blessed Trinity. And he was their man before Steel Chambers. So that's very interesting as well. So let's, I'm John Morgo along with Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. We are the last three guys to do a podcast. We've just been talking Georgia State football and basketball, talking more football right now. It seemed to be a very quiet week in college football, at least for us, because everybody was off. Georgia was off. Georgia Tech is off. Very quiet. But still, Daniel, I'll let you start. What was, what did you see in the college football this last weekend?
Ohio State.
Right. Ohio State lost to Purdue.
They got exposed. I think this has been the ongoing trend of this football season. Exposure.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Georgia get exposed last week by LSU, right? Now we're seeing Ohio State. Ohio State really can't do anything outside of Gaskins.
Okay? Right.
They can't do anything outside of them. They can't really run the football like that. And I'm going to talk about it in my last minute. I'll just talk about inspiration. Because Purdue got pulled a lot of inspiration. They were inspired. I will talk about it in my last minute. But they were extremely inspired this weekend. A team that is 4-3. But don't look now, folks. They are actually tied in their division. So in a very busy division with Northwestern actually sitting at the top of the Big Ten West. But they're right in it. You know, so Purdue's not really a slouch from what we've seen last night. They did everything right. Nothing went wrong for them last night.
Well, I think Purdue is one of those squads that's kind of cyclical because they're not going to get the quality recruits that Ohio State, that Michigan getting year in, year out. But they're good. But now and then they're going to get some people come in that are really good. I'm thinking about when Drew Brees was there. They're going to get those players on kind of a cyclical nature. So once every 5, 6, 7 years, yes, they're going to come on and surprise. The question is, can Purdue be able to sustain that? But that's going to be really tough in the Big Ten. The only good thing if you're Purdue is that you're not in that division with Ohio State. You're in the other division there, and there's a lot more chances there in that other division.
If you're recruiting players for Purdue, that has to be a great sales pitch about the win against Ohio State. I mean, that has to be the largest victory Purdue has had in a couple of years.
Certainly in recent memory. I mean, they might have had one when Drew Brees was there, and he was doing it. Congratulations to Drew Brees. He is your new NFL passing king. Both touchdowns and total yards. So he's got the two big records.
We have to congratulate him, don't we?
Yeah, we kind of have to because he set the two biggest records the NFL has. You got to have to do it.
I'm going to go back to Drew Brees in a minute. I'm going to make a correction. Northwestern's actually 4-1 in the conference, but Iowa, Purdue, and Wisconsin are 3-1. So they're all three of those teams are half game behind Northwestern. for the Big Ten West, and Michigan is leading the Big Ten East, of course, followed by Ohio State, Maryland, Penn State, Michigan State. So that's the way that's shaping out. But going back to Drew Brees, you know, oftentimes you have teams that you dislike, right?
Yes.
But there's always somebody or some people on that team that you can't dislike. And mm-hmm. Drew Brees is one of them. One of the great men in this league. One of the great all-time greats. He should be in the conversation as one of the greatest to ever play the position. You know, and it speaks for itself. He did give the city of New Orleans a Super Bowl championship. He did give. He's just giving back to that city. Mm-hmm. You know, so no ill will towards him, man. And they actually came back and won their game today. They're at 5-1. They defeated Baltimore at Baltimore.
Right, and Purdue's got at Michigan State coming up next week. They won't play Wisconsin until the 17th of November. That's before their last game with Indiana. So that Big Ten division is going to be very interesting because you got really have the Big Ten. It's the was it the legends and the yeah. coaches? I forget what they call it, but. It's really now we got the East and the West, and that's like I said, Wisconsin's in there, Minnesota, Iowa. It's going to be a very interesting the way this whole thing kind of plays itself out. Iowa's at Penn State before getting Purdue, so we'll see what happens over there. And you talk and so Leon, I'm sorry, you were going
to
say something.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I didn't mean to cut you like that.
No, don't worry about it.
But imagine if you are Urban Meyer and the right hand to the forehead connection that has to have happened at that. Because then on the flip side of that being Purdue's largest victory in recent memory, I mean, how big of a loss? I mean, it wasn't just – now, we're not talking about – Daniel and I were talking about this off air about it's not how you lose – or it's not if you lose, it's all about how you lose to a certain degree, especially in light of college sports. That's really looked upon.
Right.
It was bad enough the fact that Purdue wasn't ranked. All right. It wasn't bad enough to the point where Purdue was barely a 500 team. All right.
They were a 500 team coming into the game.
Oh, you know, that wasn't even the worst part. All right. It wasn't, you know, it's a toss up between the fact that you let these guys hang almost 50 on you.
Right.
And you didn't even break. And you didn't even break into the 30s. Like almost, you got punched in the mouth, and you didn't sit back and swing. Like there wasn't. They didn't have the Chris Paul recovery to Rajon Rondo's jab.
Mm-hmm.
They sat back and as Purdue was say wailing off on them the whole night. Ohio State was sitting there still nursing one wound to the next wound to the next wound, and before they wound up, you were getting smacked up by almost 30 points.
Here's my thing too that we have to. Remember, a lot of things were going on in the news about Ohio State this week with Nick Bosa, who's obviously their best defensive player, came out and said, hey, listen, I'm going to sit out for the rest of the year, and I probably won't be back until December or something like that, but he's going to focus on the NFL draft next year.
Forehead slap.
Yeah.
Right hand to forehead connection.
There you go. So now you're thrown off.
Your defense, your playing, like, your scheme is.
Yeah, right. And you said you're going to come back. You're not going to come back until December. Isn't that when bowl season starts? the Big Ten championship game will be if you make it, because now you have to beat Michigan to get there. Michigan's 5-0, and if you lose another game, then you might as well be out of it. You know. So it was a real tough pill for Ohio State to swallow.
Man. Nick Bosa.
And it's like what you said before, though, Leon, but we were talking about in the NFLs are often judged, teams are often judged by wins and losses straight up, right?
Exactly.
So is the NCAA. So is NCAA football.
To an extent,
but it's style.
Yes.
You have to do it by style points, and it's who you beat and how you beat them. That's what it is, and that's why this loss is so huge for Ohio State.
Yeah, because really all you're trying to do now is get into the college football playoff. What we're trying to do, though, is democratize it a little bit. You win your conference championship, you get in, unless you're Alabama. You're in automatically. So Ohio State's going to have to win that conference championship if they want to get in. And you're right that if they lose to Michigan, they might not even get into the conference final. So they'll be knocked out. I'm looking at their schedule right now. They got three more games before that Michigan. For that Michigan game, they're playing Nebraska at home after a bye week. Really, the only game on there that might trip them up before Michigan will be Michigan State, and that's going to be at Spartan Field up in East Lansing.
Absolutely. I think so, too. Sparty played Michigan this weekend, but Michigan's a better football team than they were week one against Notre Dame, okay? And, see, this is what we go back to it again. Notre Dame was just a better team that night.
Yes.
Okay, at Notre Dame. So we can't really base it. That's just like saying if Texas was going to have an off year because they lost to Maryland. They lost to an inspired Maryland team. So you weren't going to – Alabama was probably going to be the only team that was going to beat Maryland at that time. So,
yeah.
You know, so when you look at that Ohio State-Michigan State matchup is going to be – that they better go in there with their ears up and pin to the back or whatever you want to call it. Because Michigan State is going to play inspired football.
So, do you believe that Notre Dame could possibly have a grudge against Alabama based on what happened to them a couple years ago?
Well, they probably will be set out for revenge, but
well, so would everybody else, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Join the stand in line.
Exactly.
You know, because Clemson's been outed by them last year in the semifinals, and I mean, just outplayed them. So, a lot of people listen. Alabama's the target. Okay, without question, they are the deepest target. Who has the best shot at them? Who knows, man?
We're getting to the point where it's like nobody. We're getting to that. We're getting to that point. I don't think we're there yet. But I think if they dismantle LSU next week, or I'm sorry, in two weeks, if they dismantle LSU in 2 weeks, yeah, then we'll be at that point.
Right.
You know, I was watching the great Paul Feinbaum earlier this week. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think there's a bigger SEC guy than.
Well, first of all, the SEC pays him.
Right.
I mean, that's right. Part of it.
So, but you know, it was interesting to hear Paul say this. He says that Alabama is sucking the life out of college football.
Well, they're taking all the drama out of it. We know that Alabama's going to be in the national championship game, and we know that they're going to demolish whomever they're going to play. It's almost like what happened when, it is, I'm going to say it right now, it is what happened with when Connecticut was in women's basketball, when they were crushing everybody. And they were in a totally different league. Not only did they play their games against American Athletic Conference, but they also scheduled seemingly every top 10 team in the country and beating them handily. I mean, those seniors almost graduated from UConn without ever having lost a game.
From their freshman year.
From their freshman year, which is astounding if you think about it. And I dare you, we don't have time to do it now, but go into the American Athletic Conference database. Take a look at the game totals or the scores that Connecticut put on against teams in that conference, like Cincinnati. Who else? Memphis, Cincinnati, Memphis, Houston. It's like 90-30, 100-48. I mean, it was just laughable.
You remember when they played? Remember South Florida was like a top 25 team. It was like ranked number 23 or something like that. And UConn still goes in there and beat them by like 50. It's ridiculous.
And Alabama is getting to that point, and there's really, I hate to say it, there's nothing you can do about it.
Go out there and play.
Exactly. Basketball is a little different, because if you have two good players, you can compete with anybody.
Yes.
If you have three good players, you can be a good team. And since you've got five, yeah, they're easier to get that five. But, you know, football, you have to have 22 good players, and you have the people backing them up have to be pretty good players. And, you know, Alabama's got five-star players basically carrying water at this point.
Exactly. But, that's what it is.
Yeah.
The funny part about it is that, and somebody mentioned it, you know, with Tua Tagovailoa's knees giving him problems, you still have arguably the second best quarterback in the conference. So backing him up. So you really don't have anything to worry about. And by the way, I think it should be said, I think Tua is actually running away with the Heisman right now.
Yeah, he is.
He hasn't played in the fourth quarter yet this season, but he doesn't need to.
But if you
he hasn't turned the ball over yet.
Right.
But if you let Saban tell it, yeah, I think that Tua's spirals need to be a little tighter.
He's always going to find something to nitpick. He always is. That's what makes him so good.
Funny, you meant nitpick. That's what it is.
Yeah, nitpick. Exactly. Well, let's take a look. Let's briefly turn to the pro game. Leon, your Chargers went out of the country and had a great win this morning against Tennessee.
Oh, yeah. You know, you went across went across the pond.
Yes. Went to Wembley Stadium.
And opened up a nice can.
They had the fish and chips.
Yeah. And, you know, took down Mr. Mariota. You know, much respect to Mr. Mariota. You know, it's almost as if my Chargers, you know, usually, you know, and I'm talking, this is a, I'm a lifelong Charger fan. I'm talking about, we're talking Dan Fouts, Charlie Joyner, Stan Humphries, Tony Martin, Natron Means. We're finally getting it right at the beginning of the part of the season.
Mm-hmm.
The last time we had, like, a great season was 2009, in which we finished 13-3. To lose disappointingly to the Jets when they had Darrell Revis. But, you know, and even in that year, we started off horrible. And, you know, at 1-3, then we went on to go 13-3. The year before then, in 2008, we actually became the first team to start 0-4 and still make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. You know, and make some noise. That's where the ascendance of Darren Sproles came out. So, to look at the Chargers now, and, you know, we're actually, you know, being looked upon as being a powerhouse again. You know, we got Phillip Rivers is connecting for 75-yard strikes in year, like, 25 as a quarterback. I mean, I'm actually, you know, and I'm in, and you know, a lot of people have ran and raved about Phillip Rivers. You know, oh, he's such a great quarterback, Hall of Fame considerations, 30,000 yards plus. When I seen that, I feel like Saban. That's good, but we haven't been to the playoffs since 2013.
Right.
I don't care. And before then, we haven't been to the playoffs since 2009. So I'm looking at W's and L's. And it seems to me that Phillip Rivers has heard me, and he's responded accordingly. Since last year of week 17, we are 12-4 as a football team. It seems that we woke up, and it seems that Phillip Rivers, he sees this young man named Patrick Mahomes. And I feel it that, you know, and this could be a little far fetched, but you know what? I'm a Charger fan, so I'm passionate, and I'm void of reason. Phillip Rivers does not like the fact that these people are coming to his conference that he's been in for 10 plus years and taking over his conference. We didn't like when Peyton Manning did it, and I don't like it that we're not going to let this rookie, this hot shot out of Kansas City, do it either. So I'm feeling good about it. You know, we're beating the teams that are supposed to beat, and we're doing the way we're supposed to be doing it.
Yeah, you're 5-2 right now, half game out of first, but depending on what the Chargers, what the Chiefs do against the Bengals later on tonight. But you guys won four straight, and I think it's been a very quiet four straight.
Right, because you know, the Chargers usually win four straight in December. Historically, we on December we're in beast mode. So you know, to see us, you know. Especially like what happened last year, you know, our special teams has betrayed us last year. I mean, we were just Benedict Arnold by our kicker. So now it's like, you know, we're doing what we're supposed to be doing, and it feels, you know, I feel invigorated, man. You know, I almost wore my Charger. Well, tomorrow I'm wearing my Charger jersey.
Okay, good.
Next Sunday, you know, feeling good. I'm feeling great.
Oh. And looking over the looking over the standings right now. Of course, the Patriots are running away with the East. It's a two-man dogfight between the Chargers and the Chiefs. But you look at the other two divisions. The South is mixed up. You don't know who's going to win there. And look over at the North. You got Cincinnati and Baltimore tied up. And even the Browns are still in it. Even the Steelers are still in it.
Yeah, you know, you look at those divisions. And how about the Houston Texans? They started out 0-3, and we were looking like, okay, what's wrong with them? They're now 4-3 after today's victory over Jacksonville. And in that game, Jacksonville game, they benched Blake Bortles. They benched him. And my thing is, and I think I asked this question last week after the beatdown they suffered at Dallas, what in the world is wrong with Jacksonville now? And it's not just... It can't be just Blake Bortles. That defense is giving up points, and they're giving up a lot of yards. This was highly regarded as one of the toughest defense in the NFL last year.
Against non-mobile quarterbacks.
So you think that's it?
Yeah, so that's your problem.
Yep.
Go into it a little more.
Well, when you look at the way Jacksonville performs against the non-mobiles, they're 3-0, and they're looking like the defense, the best defense that we've seen come out of that city in quite some time. But then you insert insert Dak, who has the largest rushing, and you know Dak is a runner, but we haven't seen Dak put up those type of running numbers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then for the next week to come, all they have Deshaun Watson that does the same thing.
He's starting to look great. He's starting to look great. I think with Deshaun Watson, those first, like, 2-3 weeks maybe were the injuries. He was trying to still get over that ACL injury, but I think he's good now, man.
Yeah, he had to get the rest off.
He's looking like the guy me and John have always known.
Right. Exactly.
Guys, I need to vent for a second.
Go ahead. That's what we're here for.
Philadelphia Eagles.
Oh, we got to talk about them.
No. There's two more teams. Cleveland Browns and Baltimore Ravens. You had one job. Philadelphia, you're up 17 to nothing going into the fourth quarter, and you let Cam Newton score 3 straight touchdowns on you and get that victory, and you're the defending Super Bowl champions, okay? Who else did I say? Cleveland?
You said Cleveland. Baltimore.
I said Baltimore. I'm going to get to them last. Yeah. They're dead last. Cleveland. I saw that game right before I left to come up here. I took my son to work and then jetted up here. Cleveland looked like they had this game won. Jabril Peppers, I thought, had a great game until he fumbled in the overtime and set up a game-winning field. Now, their kicker, Tampa Bay's kicker, can't remember his name. But
That's good. If you don't know your team's kicker's name, that means A, you're not relying on him, or B, he's not goofing up.
Right. So he misses a 40-yard field goal that sends the game into overtime. But he nails a 58-yarder to win the game in overtime. That's it. Come on, man. Cleveland, you have one job. My wife just texted me and said, Baltimore, you had one job. The last time I checked the score, Baltimore was up 17-0. They lose 24-23 to the incomparable Drew Brees and the New Orleans Saints. So you know what that means? Everybody in our division is one, and we're in last place, and we've got to get that win tomorrow night against the Giants, which I think we will.
I think we will, too.
Because and the one thing that's going to make us look good, the Giants on the offensive line, they're having problems protecting Eli Manning. So we're having problems getting to the quarterback. Something has to give way. I think Tack McKinley will get it going. I think Vic Beasley will get it going on the outside edges. They have to rush. Grady Jarrett is set to come back. So we should be good on that pass rush. I think that's going to determine the difference of the game. This is how you win ball games, by winning the line of scrimmage. That's how we defeated Carolina earlier this year, by winning the line of scrimmage. And I think if we do that on both ends, then we'll be fine.
Well, looking at the standings right now, if the Falcons do win that game, they'll give them 3-4 on the year. Here's a list of teams who are also 3-4. Dallas is 3-4. They just lost to Washington. Philadelphia, 3-4. The Bears and Lions are 3-3. And the Buccaneers are 3-3. And the Pack, 3-2-1. So we've been writing this team off for dead the last couple of weeks. But if they can get that victory, they'll be right in the thick of it. And I've just rattled off 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, about 7 teams. I forgot about the Seattle Seahawks. They're 3-3 as well. But let's be honest, the West is the Rams. They have a 3.5 game lead over everybody, and they got a big game next week against the Packers. So the Rams are in. If you want to say New Orleans and Carolina in, Minnesota 4-2 in, and Washington 4-2. So there's still a lot of jockeying room for the Falcons, but they got to win that game tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow night's
going to
be very interesting.
Go ahead. Well, let's look at the Falcons. Mm-hmm. Is it really that bad for you guys right now?
Well, the problem is there's nobody on defense.
Right. I look like this. You guys have New York Monday night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is it really?
We should be able to win that game, right?
Yes.
We should be able to win that
game.
But, of course, sometimes, you know, with Ohio State was supposed to beat Purdue.
This is true.
Right.
But if I'm a Falcons fan, you know, which is, this is my home now. Mm-hmm. You guys have New York coming Monday night, right?
Yep, we got a bye week.
And then guess who you guys have after the bye week?
The Redskins.
The Redskins, right?
Right. Very. No. Worse. Better.
Cleveland?
Yes.
No, wait, I thought it was
the Redskins. No, it's the Redskins. It's the Redskins.
Yeah. Cleveland must be right after them.
Which is cool, right? That's dinner time.
Yes.
You guys should eat on that. You know, it's possible, you know, what the Redskins are looking like a quality team this year.
The Redskins' defense is a little better.
Yeah, they're the quality team, but they can lose. Then, just when you thought it couldn't get a little better for you guys, you got to have Baker, or turnover maker coming up afterwards. So, you know, then, by then, so you guys, you know, then afterwards, you know, you have the, I don't know where they're at, Cowboys.
We don't know where the Cowboys are going to go.
That's what makes them dangerous, because we don't even know what Cowboys team is going to show up. And then there's reports out there that they're trying to trade for Amari Cooper.
Yeah, that's serious. But then, that's momentum. Those are momentum games. Mm-hmm. Because going into that, you guys have the first place Saints coming up, which will be the
Thanksgiving night.
Yes, that will be the, what was the word you used, John?
Verify, I think, validate.
Your season right there.
Yeah.
That would turn
more
to season.
I've been on record to say this, there's no way we go into New Orleans on a Thursday night, on a Thanksgiving night, and beat them.
But if you guys have three games of momentum.
That's true. And then we'll catch them at the right time, too, because this New Orleans team could possibly go 9-10-1 by that time.
Very possible,
and that could slip up. And that could be their slip up game, and we can get them. I see where you're going with it. I definitely see where you're going with it. But if they don't win this game,
it's going to look good.
Say they're in it, man.
Because looking at New York, though, what is stopping New York from drafting a quarterback?
I think their loyalty
to Eli Manning will run out right after that 16th game this season. I think they tried to pull the plug last season, but did it very poorly. Now this time they're going to get it right and definitely pull the plug on them. I don't think they have one.
Yeah, right. You don't have a reliable backup unless you're trying to say. Excuse me. You don't have a reliable backup unless you're trying to salvage the season. And you say, you know what, let's just go ahead and just put this one in. You know, let's just go ahead and put this in the books. We're not going anywhere. Why don't we test this guy and see what this guy can do?
They're doing none of that. They're just
They've
cleared the decks for Eli. Like, hey, Eli, don't worry about it.
And no. Man, I kind of feel bad for Saquon Barkley, because he is such a dynamic player. And he's putting up Pro Bowl numbers. You know, this guy can do it all, man. But he just don't have it around him. And it's sad to say that, especially when you got Odell Beckham Jr.
Who's having nervous breakdowns every single game. Man, he can't take it. He's like, I just got paid too. I'm trying to. Man, he just doesn't like losing. He's all you see is the blonde bangs flapping in the wind after every game.
Guys, we're going to have to leave it there because time is winding down. I got a couple more topics I want to race through. First of all, just came down from the NBA. Brandon Ingram suspended 4 games without pay. Rajon Rondo, 3 games. And Chris Paul, 2 games without pay for that altercation during last night's Laker-Rocket game. Your thoughts?
I think it was kind of fair. I figured that was going to be the range. You said Paul got 2 games, Rondo got 3, and Ingram got 4. Ingram was actually the instigator of the whole scenario.
Right.
So he should have gotten more games. I thought that all 3 of them really should have gotten 3 games, mm-hmm. at least, because punches were thrown. So I don't know what the policy is, but it's fair enough. It's the beginning of the year, and everybody's already talking. This is already playoff basketball we're seeing. So good suspension. I think that was pretty much fair by the league.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be worse than that, to be honest with you.
I did, too. I really did.
When I seen 2 games for Paul, mm-hmm. 3 games for Rajon, mm-hmm. and 4 for Brandon, I'm like, okay. I thought it was going to be like 8 or something like that. I thought they about to throw the library at Brandon Ingram for that one.
Yeah, I did, too.
Man, that was ugly. I mean, you know, but you know, it happens in hockey all the time, though. But when's the last time you seen such a smooth jab connected NBA? I mean, my goodness. I haven't seen that since I would like to say the mouth at the palace.
Right.
Yeah.
That was probably the ugliest.
Still the worst in history.
Yeah.
Still the worst.
You did have that time when Rudy T got his head bounced off the floor, though, in 78 by He actually almost died.
Yeah.
You know, it was crazy.
Kirby Washington.
Yeah. That was the right hook heard around the world. And then, you know, you got the win. Then that's going to definitely go down when all time fights. When that's going to go up there with, you know, when Dr. J jumped, when I think this is coordinated. I promise you. I believe that they coordinated that they were tired of Larry Bird. Because, you know, Larry Bird, oh, man, Larry Bird used to talk that stuff. Larry Bird, he said, I'm going to be at the three-point line standing at 7 o'clock, yep. And I'm going to score on you just like this with this amount of net, and it's going to go in the splash. And he used to do it. And yes. He was talking that stuff to Dr. J, who's an established veteran at the time. And I believe they coordinated that, hey, Moses, I want you to, you know, first of all, we're going to send an email to Robert Parrish and Dennis Johnson. Walk away. You know, and they jumped Larry Bird at the half point at the half court line. And Charles Barkley to this day will still deny the fact that he wasn't holding Larry Bird by the neck while Dr. J was wailing off on him.
And while we're talking about the NBA, I want to give this quick update. Atlanta Hawks 87, Cleveland Cavaliers 79, 2.5 left in the third quarter. That one, Trae Young has already scored 30 points.
Oh, yeah. Cleveland will finish 2-80 this year.
Oh, exactly. Yes, sir. All right, World Series time. It's going to be the Red Sox and the Dodgers going at it. Leon, who do you have?
Well, you know, I'm a SoCal person, so I believe in Clayton Kershaw and Passion of a Reason.
Uh-huh.
And I'm running with Passion. I'm a Padre fan by heart, but if the Padres aren't there, I'm going to have to run with the Dodgers.
Daniel?
I've been on record as to say that I thought that the Dodgers was going to win if they got past the Braves, which they did, that they was going to be in the World Series again and they were going to win it again. But it was against the Astros. This is the Boston Red Sox, the best team in baseball. Boston looked good, but I think that the Dodgers understood what it meant to lose to the Astros last year. I think the Dodgers will outcoach them. I think they'll outpitch them. And I think that'll out-hit them. I think they've looked so well and they've looked so great. I like the Dodgers in 6 games.
Well, I'm very conflicted about this series because my parents grew up in New England. My dad grew up in Worcester. Diehard Boston Red Sox fan, so that's kind of trickled down. But I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. These were the days before the Diamondbacks. So I used to, and this is kind of where I got my love for sports. I kind of sat out in the backyard every night during the summer with my old AM transistor radio, put the antenna way up, and I could pull in the Dodgers, the Angels, the Padres, the A's, the Giants, the Cubs. I could pull everybody in. And that was my soundtrack growing up. Vin Scully on the radio. That was it. And I was always a Dodger. And I was always a Dodger fan because of that. So you got Dodgers and Red Sox very conflicted. And I can't even go to my college for help because I got Walker Buehler for the Dodgers. I got David Price for the Red Sox. Two Vanderbilt stalwarts going at it. So you know what? I'm going to go with the Red Sox in 7.
Okay. Passion. It's the passion.
Yeah.
So that means you're from the New England area.
My dad was a salesman for Honeywell,
you're a Patriots fan?
So we kind of jumped around, yeah.
You know I'm a Charter fan, right?
Yeah, I know.
You know he's an Atlanta fan, right? Falcons fan, right?
Well, my dad. Well, after the Patriots, defeated the Falcons.
Oh yeah, Daniel, lock that door.
Let me just tell the story. For my birthday, which was a couple months later, my dad bought me a shirt. It said New England Patriots 28-3. Best comeback in a Super Bowl. I'm like, thanks, Dad. You bought me something I can't wear outside for 2 years.
In the wrong city. Oh, man. Where were you going to wear that shirt?
When I went home to when I visited my parents in Las Vegas. I could probably get away with it then.
John would wear that shirt.
Probably
be doing that.
Oh, man. I remember, man. I got so many negative. You know, we beat you guys one time when Tom Brady was suspended. Mm-hmm. I believe he was hurt that year. When you guys had Matt Castle as your quarterback.
Okay.
And you guys, ACL.
Yeah, torn ACL. ACL. And the Chargers, we beat you guys that game. Oh man, that was so relieved. It'd been great if Tom Brady had just been in the game. Phil Rivers has never beaten Tom Brady before.
All right. Well, we're getting toward the last couple minutes of this podcast. So once again, do a little roundtable. Things you might have missed over the week. Leon, go.
Well, I'd like to talk about the Lakers. again. You know, as America, you know that I am a Laker fan, passionate, been one for all my life. A lot of people are saying that there's so much hype around a 0-2 team. You know, that, hey, we just might take the sixth seed and things of that nature. Well, I like to say this. Get used to it. Because we're the Lakers and we're relevant again.
Yes.
And what is the NBA without a relevant Laker team?
Right.
So, you know, I like the grit and the grind that my team showed over the weekend. You know, it's unfortunate that LeBron's homecoming was ruined by the melee. And, you know, he's going to sit down and, you know, he's going to talk to these youngsters and let them know that, hey, you know, I'm not, you know, he's not trying to, you know, provide, you know, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a lot of chippy games. You know, there's a big, you know, I mean, we got to say that, you know, there has, you know, next to the Golden State Warriors, you know, LeBron has generated the most hate He is the reason why so many teams have not won anything or have not met their expectations. And, you know, you bring that to the Lakers where everybody hates the Lakers. So it's like a perfect fit. You know, everybody hates LeBron. Everybody hates the Lakers. You know, it's toss between him and Kobe, who's the most hated. And, you know, people are going to be rooting against us and everything like that. And we love it. We love it. So I like to say I like the Lakers to keep on pushing. We have Rajon Rondo's going to be out for 3 games. So that's going to give Lonzo Ball another chance to go off and show us what he has. So I'm excited. I hope America's excited. And get used to it. Because we're going to be around.
That was dope, man.
All right, Daniel.
All right, here we go, man. So, during my last minute, sometimes you'll hear me give a salute to someone, and then other times you just hear me just go off on things that's going on. Well, this week I'm going to give a salute to actually 2 people. One guy is Tyler Trent. He was a Purdue student, and he was the one that has terminal cancer. Okay, so it took him everything to show up to this game with Purdue. He predicted that Purdue would win this game. Guess what? They won 49-20. He was there. He gave an emotional speech to Purdue's locker room. He was in the locker room, gave an emotional speech. It was just everything that you wanted. My lesson to you kids is this. Sometimes it's not the best team who wins. It's the most inspired team. And Purdue was the most inspired team to win this game. So I want to give a salute to Tyler Trent. Give a salute to his family. Keep fighting, man. Keep fighting. One more guy I want to salute, and we haven't saluted him. I don't even think we mentioned his name. Adam Thielen broke a record today. He broke midway in the fourth quarter. He became the first player in the Super Bowl era to record 100 yards receiving in each of his team's first 7 games. Now, if he does it next week, he'll tie Calvin Johnson for the overall record of most consecutive games with 100 receiving yards. I'm going to leave it at this. Adam Thielen is the best wide receiver in football today. I'm going to leave it at that.
Daniel is hooked on a Thielen. Yep,
he is the best receiver in football today. Why? Because he makes the catches at crucial times, at crucial moments. Teddy Bridgewater can go to him. Kirk Cousins can go to him. Daniel Bolton can even go to him. And he will be there. He will make that catch. Adam Thielen, to me, he deserves a salute as well. Best receiver in football right now.
That's interesting coming from a Falcons fan.
Yeah, he'll try to go for tie the record next week in London against Jacksonville.
Yeah,
that's going to be an interesting one. Well, as people here know, I went to Vanderbilt. And because, as I said to Rachel Barbo when we were talking a couple weeks ago, because I like to cause myself pain. But, you know, one good thing about Vanderbilt this week, and it came up, sure, wasn't the loss to Kentucky 14-7, where they failed to convert a 3rd-and-1 and a 4th-and-1 by running the exact same play. No. I'm talking about the women's soccer team. They just clinched the SEC championship in women's soccer regular season. Last time they won it, 1994, they broke the school record by going undefeated in 16 straight games, and to prove that Vanderbilt can draw in something, they broke the home attendance record, which was set a couple years ago at 3. So, Vanderbilt, good congratulations for the Vanderbilt women's soccer team, providing an incredible dose of good news as we are getting close to basketball. And like Georgia State, Vanderbilt basketball got a lot of hype train there with Shitu Sims coming in and Darius Garland coming in for them as well. A couple 5-star recruits.
The Eagles, we haven't forgot about you guys. We're going to be discussing you guys next week. Because the Eagles might make history. Will they be the way it's looking right now, potentially, will they be the first team to win Super Bowl and miss the playoffs?
No, that's happened a lot.
That's happened a lot of times.
That's happened a lot.
One team I can actually get the best recollection of is Denver Broncos after they won their 2 in a row. They beat us the year after Elway and Davis had left. Elway retired. They didn't make the playoffs.
I want to say they didn't make the playoffs the year after Peyton left.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But they have the same team. Philly has the same team.
I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those particular teams was just mentioned, lost a lot of weight. They were top heavy teams. They lost a lot of weight up top. This is the same. As a matter of fact, they've added players since last year.
It is quite disappointing to see them.
All right, well, we'll pick that up again next week. Thank you very much for listening to The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. Again, tell a friend, tell an enemy, tell a frenemy. We don't care. We're not particular. So for
Leon Brown,
only 3 people, John.
I'm John Morgo. Thank you for joining us here. We'll see you next week. Hopefully, cross your fingers and your toes and anything else to be crossed. We'll have head coach Ron Hunter on. I'm trying my darndest to knock down that interview for you here, and I'm sure that he is always a treat to talk to, and we'll have a lot to discuss. So for everybody, have a good night, everyone, and we'll see you next week.